name is Andreina.
And my name is Gabriela, and this is Wicks and Candles, a podcast about two sisters and their obsession with period film.
We want to dig into our favorite films and review them, why we love them, how they shaped us, what effect do they have on us.
Join us on a trip through palaces and manors, balls and tea parties, and a lot of dresses, carriages, and of course, wigs and candles.
In this episode, Belle. So, Gabby, today we're exploring a film based, or at least inspired, by a true story.
Yes, Nene, this is not only exciting for us in this podcast, but also quite fascinating. This story I wasn't aware of, and it's the story of a woman named Dido Elizabeth Bell.
Indeed, it's the story of a real person who lived in the 18th century and whose early life is portrayed in this film. So, Gabby, what about some facts about the movie Belle itself?
Sure, Nene. So the film Belle was made in 2013. It's a British period drama, and it was directed by Ama Asante. You will say some words later on about her. It was written by Misen Sagai and produced by Damien Jones. I'm going to give you some of the main actors who played in the film. The main role played by Dido was played by Gugu Mbatha-Raw, and Sam Reed played John Devineer, the second most important character. But we also see some of the jewels of British acting scene, like Tom Wilkinson and Miranda Richardson, Emily Watson, and some fresh faces, which I really enjoyed this time. We see Sarah Gaydon, who later on played in The Handmaid's Tale. We see Tom Felton, that we know from the Harry Potter series, and James Norton, one of my favorite actors of this genre. Yeah. So the film was successful, but kind of in the independent scene. So it was nominated for many awards, and it won some, but not of the high-ranking awards. So we're not talking about Golden Globes, Oscars, or BAFTAs. We are saying African American Film Critics Association. There, Gugu Mbatha won the award for Best Actress for this film. The film also won the award for directors to watch in the Palm Springs International Film Festival. So again, Ama Asante. And it was nominated for many awards in the Women Film Critics Circle, and it was awarded the Karen Morley Award for the entire film. So as you see, kind of not the most known film festivals, but indeed very well recognized in the film industry. So yeah, that was kind of a short summary on that. Nene, maybe you give us some hints about the plot.
So the story is based on the life of a true character, Dido Elizabeth Bell. She was the natural daughter of an enslaved African woman in the West Indies, what we would call the Antilles and the Caribbean today, and John Lindsay. He was a British Royal Navy officer. So she was the daughter of a British officer and a slave. After Dido's mother dies in 1769, Captain Lindsay takes her to his uncle, William Murray. He was the first Earl of Mansfield, and his wife, Elizabeth, who lived at Kenwood House, a very grand house in England to this day. So Lord and Lady Mansfield raised Dido as their daughter, along with their niece, Lady Elizabeth Murray, who came to live with them after her mother died and her father remarried. So as soon as Dido and her cousin become of age, they are supposed to debut in society and prepare for marriage. This was essentially their only role in the late 18th century England. So it is at this moment that Belle becomes aware for the first time that the world turns differently for her. She's an African woman growing up as part of English aristocracy in the 18th century. So she meets a young man, Jan Davinier. He's her uncle's lawyer apprentice. And he's the one who gives her a glimpse of what people with her ancestry are really going through. It turns out Lord Mansfield is Lord Chief Justice, an extremely powerful position. So while many of the facts of Dido's life were kept in the movie, the writers did take some liberties in telling her story since there's so few records of her life. So that's a little bit of the plot. So we see the moment she's brought to England and then, you know, what it means to grow up as a Black girl in the midst of the aristocracy and what happens after she realizes who she is. She understands who she is, yeah. So Gabby, before we go into more details, what were your first impressions of the movie?
I was very well impressed. I didn't know of this film until now, until our podcast. So I was very positively impressed of the story, mainly. I was very moved, and I realized while watching it how much of it I identify with. We will talk about it later on. So it marked me. It really left an impression, a big impression on me. And I don't know if I'm taking too much away already right now at this point of the podcast, but I am brown and I have very curly hair. So this will certainly play a role in our discussion.
Absolutely.
So as I said, I had a very good impression of this film, not knowing, I didn't know anything of this film or the story of Dido before I saw the film. So it really took me positively by surprise, the entire thing. This is how I took it. But Nene, maybe you tell me your impressions because you knew this film already since long ago.
Yeah. My impressions were also very positive. My first impressions. I really enjoyed this movie, and I actually had never watched it, but I knew of its existence for two reasons. One, because I'm interested in period movies. And secondly, it was just playing on Netflix. The thing is, it really went under the radar very much. I saw it floating around on Netflix and I was very intrigued. I was very, very intrigued because it was a very unusual period film. It was about a Black woman. And I didn't know if it was a fantasy, like a fiction, or if it was a telling of a real life story. So when we were deciding what movies to talk about for the podcast, I suggested this one because I thought that it was a very different one from all the rest that we have seen. And another reason was because when we were deciding to talk about, you know, what movies we wanted to talk about, Bridgerton came into the world, the series in Netflix. So there was a lot of conversation about Black characters or people of color in period film. And where are those faces? And where do they fit in history? And where are they? Why have they always been invisible in a way? So I think that was the reason that we wanted to do it. We wanted to talk about it. And then when I sat down to watch it, wow, I was blown away.
Nene, maybe let's maybe try to compact or maybe kind of structure our analysis on this kind of nice discovery we've made by talking through our main categories. So how about the cast? Tell me something about the cast.
Yeah, I feel, you know, to be honest with you, I feel completely, I feel actually ill-equipped to talk about this movie because there's so much context. There's so much historical context around the story of Dido. I mean, there's so much, it's such a complex story. I feel ill-equipped in every way. And also because it's an independent film, and I have to admit, I didn't know the cast. I mean, there's some big names, but the main characters are played by actors that I didn't know. So we have Gugu Mbatha-Raw. She's a British actress. And I think this was her breakthrough role. And she's absolutely luminous and subtle. And you know, the way she portrays this character with such intelligence. Then we have Sam Reed, who's an Australian actor, who I wasn't familiar with at all. I didn't know him. And he's very compelling as well. But then we have some of the biggest names in film. We have Tom Wilkinson, Miranda Richardson, who always kind of plays a little bit of the meanie in movies. And then we have Emily Watson playing in a period film. She was great.
She was great.
She was so great. And then we have Sarah Gadon, who we saw her in The Handmaid's Tale. So this is an unexpected role for me to see her in a period film with 18th century clothes on. She was fantastic too. But then we have a very interesting cast member, which is Tom Felton, Draco.
Draco Malfoy
is wearing 18th century clothes. Oh my God, this is amazing.
Well, if I may say something about that, now that we're talking about the cast, because I wasn't also familiar with the young faces. Of course, I recognize Emily Watson, of course, being great, and so on. And Tom Wilkinson, of course. Those are very established actors. But all these new faces, I was so taken by them. As you said, Google was for me a revelation. I didn't know any of her. And also her elegance, how dignifying she played this role. It's really great. And when I saw Tom Felton, as you mentioned, who we know as Draco Malfoy, Draco Malfoy from the Harry Potter series, I was also so surprised. And I said, wow, this is really fresh. So now we see this young generation of actors playing with the big ones, yeah? Playing with the big ones in a period film. And how refreshing that feels. How refreshing is this new generation of actors? You know, because we have been talking about period films now for the first time. This is our first episode. And we have like the usual suspects, you know, we have Hugh Grant and we have all those big names, you know, we have Maggie Smith and so on and so on and so on, and Helena Bonham Carter.
That's right.
But now we're seeing a young generation of actors who are enriching the genre. And I found it super refreshing to see Tom Felton there.
Yeah.
Even though I was a little bit disappointed about his character. Because at the end, he pretty much played Draco Malfoy.
In 18th century clothes.
In 18th century of Draco Malfoy, yes.
Potter, but with his nice, you know, nice stockings and high heels.
Exactly, and wig.
And his wig.
Yeah. How about the director? A great cast. How about the director?
The revelation of the actress, Gugu, is matched perfectly by the revelation of the, you know, the director, Amma Asante. She's a Black female director. And I think for me, that just is the cherry on top of this movie, that it was directed by this woman. And it has to be said, we have this story because a Black woman decided to tell this story.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
Which is the reason we have this movie. And, yes. and I think that's very telling. There's not much more to say about that. That's why you need people of all colors, of all origins, of all beliefs and you know, from everywhere, telling stories, because they unearth these stories that have been hidden from us from in history, that have been kept from us. And I think this is wonderful.
Yes. Yes, and I think as soon as maybe we go deeper into our conversation, we will certainly see how this reflects in the entire film. So Nene, we've gone through the cast briefly, just speaking out the highlights. I would like to review the production in general. How do you find the entire production of the film?
My goodness, this is an independent film, and we didn't research the budget for it. But it is exquisite. It doesn't look low budget. So I'm not sure. It might have not been low budget because it doesn't look low budget at all. It's high production values. The costume design. Again, we have to say that we are not expert costume historians, but we've seen a fair share of period films. And the costumes in this movie look impeccable and wonderful. And of course, in this movie, in all period films, costumes are very important because they're an essential part of the story, an essential part of telling, you know, your role, your status in society. But even more so in this movie, because we have such complicated layers of identity in this movie. So the costume design is very important, because Dido is a Black woman living in you know, 18th century England, in the middle of the aristocracy. She her costumes reveal a lot of who she is and her status in society. So I found the production impeccable, you know, from Kenwood House to, you know, to the lesser known parts of, you know, of London as a city. You know, we see a lot of the ports, and you know, where they move around, the gardens, you know, where the houses, the dresses. I found it really beautiful and well made, and I wish I had done more research about it. I think it's it doesn't look a low budget at all.
Well, I had the impression that it was just all very down to earth. So you're having the contrast in this film to other films like Farewell, My Queen, which we have reviewed already in this podcast, where you see that the entire entourage and the entire film sets and the costumes, they are really to excel. Yeah. That what you see, they went to the smallest detail. Yeah. And it was very pompous. Yeah. The entire setting. And this, of course, is another time. And of course, it's another context. But for me, it was like, it's very subdued. You know, it was like all kind of down to earth. They just did the necessary. The costumes I also found super accurate and very beautiful. As you mentioned, we're not experts, but I think I always measure the kind of the quality of the costume design if I see that it's kind of timeless, that it's not really showing the time where the film was made of, you know, was made in. And I think this is pretty...
Yeah, the costumes are true to the time. I didn't see any, you know, like in some movies, you see them trying to kind of modernize the hairstyles. But no, this is, I think, accurate, and you know, the fabrics, you know, everything. And you know, this is an aristocratic family. This is a so you know, they are not. the costumes match their position in society.
And yeah, absolutely.
They did the research well. I mean, it looks, I saw the movie a couple times, and the second time I was even more impressed by how beautiful the movie looks.
Because it was not only aristocracy, it was an earl, an earl's family, which is like below the king and the queen, the highest level of aristocracy in England. So she came into the Premier League of aristocracy.
That's right.
It was not just, some lord or whatever. It was some high-ranking aristocracy. But as I said, it was all very... I found the entire setting and the entire production just very down-to-earth. They just said, okay, what we really want to do with this film is tell a story. And the story was in the foreground. It was more important than all the other rest. And that's kind of what really captivated me. That is, okay, the main character of this entire production is the story itself that we want to tell.
Yeah.
And independently of how many super settings or how many castles we show or mansions or balls or whatever, we just want to say the story. And you mentioned something before, Nene, that I think it was also very important to mention again. The story is so well told. They made it so you don't have any anything that is too much or too little. It's a very well, the script is super good. It's very accurate to what they want to say. There is not a scene where you say, okay, why did I see this as a viewer? Or what did they have to show this? Because it doesn't really add any value to the story. No, every scene in the entire film is telling a very super important piece of the story.
Yeah.
And you cannot say the rest without any scene.
Exactly. Moving characters forward, which is, moving, developing the character forward, revealing more things about them. And yeah, it is a character film. It's a character-driven movie. It's a story about Dido discovering her place in society, and it's a very complex place in society. And the movie tells this with great intelligence.
Yes, and subtlety. It's very subtle. It's very subtle. And maybe... Nene, maybe we should start now with the really core of why we were so moved by the story, because as I mentioned at the beginning, I was so moved by the entire story. I didn't know any of this. I was so moved by the story, not only because it was a Black woman in a very white entourage in high aristocracy in England. She was also an illegitimate child of this captain and a slave. So she had kind of a double burden to carry. How difficult. And to kind of put myself in that situation, it cost me a lot of energy and it opened many things in me that I also had to question myself a lot while watching the movie and after watching the film. Just starting with the poster of the film, when you see when you see a Black face on a period film poster, you are puzzled. You're immediately puzzled. You say, this is something that I have never seen before. And already there, you start kind of turning the engines of your brain. Okay, what is the story behind this? Yeah, so... While I was watching the film, I was putting myself in her position. I was like, she felt completely out of place, out of context. Everybody was white around her. She had no orientation. No point of reference. Yeah. And I think that makes it not only, not only the film is fascinating because it's portraying the story, but the story itself is so captivating and so fascinating because it gives you this little glimpse of this society in the background of aristocracy back then.
Yeah. I want to go back to what you said. She had a double burden. I will say she had a triple burden. And I think the movie shows this very well. She was a woman in the 18th century, which is already a burden.
Because she's a woman and has to marry.
Yeah, she's a woman. And the only thing that she could, you know, hope to do was to marry and ensure that she had, you know, that she married somebody who could secure her a living. But she had two other burdens, which she was a black woman, daughter of a slave, and she was illegitimate. Those three things complicate her life in many, many ways that are very difficult to disentangle. And I think we see her, you know, questioning all of these things. For example, one of the things that we learned in the movie is that where Lord and Lady Mansfield have adopted these two girls, one white, one black, rules of society did not allow Dido to dine with the family. She could only join them after dinner in less formal settings. For example, we see a scene where she's talking to her papa, to Lord Mansfield, and asking, why can I, there's visitors coming, there's a family coming to visit, and she said, well, can I dine? Can I have dinner with you? No, you can't. You have to understand. You can't have dinner with us. So she was welcome into this world. She was raised as their daughter with all the privileges that brought. But there still were rules that she could not overcome. And this is discussed throughout the movie. How in those difficult positions that she was placed in, she was their daughter, but she could not be seen as the daughter dining, having dinner with them when people came to the house. However,
a constant dilemma.
However, she, and look how complicated this is and how complex that society was at the time. She is in many ways in a superior status to her cousin, Elizabeth Murray. Why? Because when Dido's dad dies, he leaves her an inheritance. So Dido, but she has money. And that gives her certain freedoms that her cousin, Elizabeth, and in the movie she's called Bette, they call her Bette, that Bette doesn't have. Why? Because her father didn't leave her anything. She is penniless. So her prospects for marriage are completely different to Dido's. It is
well so once much, once yeah. Lord Mansfield accepts to give any perspectives of marriage to Dido, because it wasn't taken for granted that she would debut at all in society. Yeah. So because she was kind of the well kept secret of the family, she was actually not really supposed to be out in society and marry, because they already said, what can we expect for you? You will have no chance.
And it's so strange because she, at the same time, she could decide, because she had money, she could not marry. She could decide not to marry. She could, you know, live as an unmarried woman, which for many women would have been, you know, a liberation. However, she did one love.
Well, but they will still carry a certain stigma, you know. They will still say, I never married.
Yeah.
And well, they had an aunt in the house. And, you know, she was like the woman who never married. You know, who's always somehow like an extra load for the family and so on. Yeah, it's a huge dilemma. And I think that's the moment when she realizes, when she starts to realize there's something wrong, there's something different about everything. While growing up, neither her nor Elizabeth, her cousin, were aware of their differences, you know, because they were kids and they were just playing along. They didn't know anyone outside their mansion. So they were never really made aware of how differently they looked. They took each other as cousins, nearly as sisters, while growing up together. And for them, the different looks were of absolutely no importance. So only now in adulthood, when they have to start talking about marriage, she is made aware of, okay, I look different. And for me, through my appearance, rules are different. Other rules apply. And it doesn't look good.
and there was something that it was very intriguing for me is that Lord and Lady Mansfield, what they constantly were saying about Dido is like any man who marries her will lower her status. It was hard for me to understand because they were trying to preserve her status as, you know, as the, you know, this aristocratic woman. And they say anybody who marries us will lower her status. And I don't understand what is the subtext of that? That any man who married a black woman.
Exactly. Because they would marry a black woman who actually has no title. They would marry below their status.
Yeah.
That was her the little box she had to carry with her.
Yeah. She was she was neither here nor there. She didn't belong absolutely anywhere. And I think we can talk a little bit about our favorite scenes or most movie scenes. And one thing that we haven't mentioned yet is that one of the reasons Dido's stories is known to history is because of a famous painting by David Martin. I believe he's a Scottish painter who was very prominent at the time, which helps explain how the painting is interpreted today. And this is a famous painting showing Dido and her cousin, Lady Elizabeth. And the movie essentially is you know is inspired by the painting. The painting can be seen today. You can visit. I think it's in Scotland today, yes. Where you can go visit and see the painting. I think it's in the ancestral home of Lord Mansfield.
Yes,
where the painting is hanging today, and this is an important thread throughout the movie, which is the fact that we see a scene where there's the painter arrives at the home and he's going to paint. He's been commissioned to paint the girls. And Dido goes to her papa, Lord Mansfield, and said, why? What's happening? And she's afraid. She's very afraid of being pictured, of being painted. Why? We understand that later. All depiction of were as slaves. And the depictions will often have different key elements. For example, black people will be shown smaller in the painting, in, you know, being servant slaves. They will be kneeling. They will have a lower position in the painting. They will be serving somebody. They were shown an exotic. So we then understand she's afraid she's going to be depicted as the slave, the servant of her cousin. That's why she's reluctant to be painted. Later, as the movie progresses, she understands that no, the painting was commissioned to show them both as sisters with yes. equal status. And our historians today, when they analyze the painting, they see, you know, for example, how the dresses that they're wearing are the same quality of fabric. So our historians are reading the picture and understanding what kind of status was given to Dido in the painting. And they say, you know, she's at the same level. In fact, her head is higher. She's wearing a turban, and they say this is not to make her look exotic, but this is, you know, a common costume that people will wear in paintings. And her expression, she has her finger on her cheek, and they're holding each other like her cousin is holding her arm. This painting is understood today to be showing Dido as equal in status as her cousin, which is extremely important and unusual.
Yes.
Or painting of the period. So this plays throughout the movie. We see other scenes where she sees all the pictures. She's a picture of in her house, a painting where she sees this little boy slave. And in another scene with John Davinie, she sees this little sign in a bar or a pub where this slave boy is kneeling in front of his master. And she's constantly seeing these images. These are the only images of yes. black people she sees.
Exactly, because she has really no reference of, she knows, at least that's how they portray her in the movie. She has very little information on slavery, conditions for the slaves, the current laws and so on and so on. She apparently doesn't know anybody in her surroundings who is black or slave or and then a character comes into the story, John Davinia, you have mentioned him already, and he is supposed to be a lawyer's apprentice to her uncle, who we've said he was the Lord Chief Justice of England and was supposed to take care of a very scandalous case of that time. That's the movie. The movie plot. So this John Davinia comes as an apprentice and he works together with Dido's uncle, but they are not the same. They don't share the same opinion. The Lord Chief, her uncle, has still kind of a very conservative view on the case, and it's kind of considering going the conservative way in his decision. And this young lawyer's apprentice has a very revolutionary view on the thing and brings the thought of putting slavery in question at all. You know, the case was about a ship carrying slaves and all the slaves being sent overboard and killed by the captain of the ship. So this entire story in the background is also giving this entire context also to Dido, what is happening actually outside of her mansion, you know, what's happening in the real world. I'm living here in this protected bubble, but apparently people that look like me and where I come from are going through so much worse things. And this is kind of given in by this character of John Davinia. And I really want to know, Nene, from you, which was your favorite scene, or one of your favorite scenes? Because one of my favorite scenes includes this character, John Davinia.
Do you want to tell your first one first? I have so many favorite ones.
Do you have so many favorite ones? Yeah, so there's one scene. We know that Dido has been kind of illegally leaving her house, secretly leaving her house and going to the city to meet this man, just to talk, because she's just very intrigued and she's very curious and she wants to know everything about all this topic. So they meet and they talk a lot, and he tells her a lot about his views on these issues and so on. So in one scene, she is in her carriage because she is taken to the city by a servant in her mansion in a carriage. And she's sitting in the carriage and the uncle has kind of caught word of it. And he surprises them and said, okay, so now I got behind your story. Now I know that you're secretly coming to the city to meet this man. So they sit, the three of them, in this carriage. It's a very small place. It's a very close-up shot. And the discussion that takes place in this carriage is between the uncle of Dido and this lawyer's apprentice, again, John Davinia. And it's such a passionate discussion. It's such a passionate dialogue of two completely contrasting views. And you are in this very, very small place of the carriage, taken completely by the words of these two men. And as I said, this is one of my favorite scenes because it completely overwhelmed me. I was completely moved, nearly to tears, only by the speech of conviction, of the truth that John Davinia was so, so passionate about. I loved it completely.
Yeah. Oh, Gabby, that is one of my favorite scenes as well. And it is because the movie not only tells the story of Dido, but in the background we have this whole story, as you said, of this very famous case that was in front of the court of England, of this the ship, the Song ship, where, you know, the captain and the crew had thrown overboard over 130 slaves and were claiming insurance. So the philosophical discussion behind the case was that, you know, that slaves could be insured as any other cargo would. So one of the things that Vinnie is questioning is the morality of such a thing. Where Lawrence Mansfield, who's a very kind, smart, beautiful man, in fact, yeah, is in expanding what the law can do. He's a man of the law. He follows the law. And what Davini is trying to show him is that laws can be unjust. Yes, it might be the law, but it's immoral.
Is the law correct?
Is it
at all?
Is it worth keeping this law? Yeah. And this is the discussion at the core of the film. You know, and he says to Lord Mansfield, you broke the law, quote unquote, by bringing Dido into your life. You must be able to see beyond this case and what this means for, you know, the institution of slavery. The insurers, the captain of the boat, were, you know, said we had to throw away these slaves because they were damaged cargo, and they were trying to claim insurance. And this is, you know, an abhorrent idea. And Davinie is fighting for this. And this is all connected with his feelings, increasing feelings for Dido. And I think that scene is one of the key scenes, but it comes kind of like the third quarter part of the film, like three quarters into the movie. One of my favorite scenes is when Dido realizes, you know, how the color of her skin affects everything she does. And I don't remember exactly when it happens, but I think it's after the visit of these two gentlemen who might be material for them, for both Bet and Dido. And she understands she will never be equal to Bet or anybody else in her society. She will never be an equal because of her skin. And she sits in front of the mirror and, oh my God, even talking about it, I want to cry. Like even talking about it, about that scene, I feel like I would cry. I want to cry again. She sits in front of the mirror and she's in such pain that she starts hitting herself in the chest, in her face, how to get, you know, like she's inside her skin. She's inside her black skin. And the pain she feels for being judged for it and being measured by it and because of it, what a performance. And when she meets John Davinie, they have like a kind of like a difficult beginning. Like their relationship is not perfect from the beginning because he comes into the house and she's very distant. She's very curt with him. Like, why do you come into the house? And, you know, you're not allowed to come to the house. And he's like, oh, well, you know, I just came to bring these papers and so on. So their beginning of their relationship is a little bit, you know, I'm a high-class girl, whatever. I'm an aristocratic girl. And, you know, you are just the son of a clergyman. She was following the rules of, you know, class. She's not mean to him or anything. She's just kind of like surprised by him. And little by little, when she starts to hear their discussions, she becomes more and more interested. And she sees Davinie. The reason she's drawn to Davinie, first of all, he's coming into the house and he's working on the case. And she's drawn to him because nobody's telling her anything. Her papa is not telling her anything. In fact, he says she's young. Her papa, Lord Mansfield, he said she's too young. She's not ready to know about these things, quote unquote, slavery and you know what's happening in the outside world. She's not supposed to know about this yet. She's too young. So he wants to protect her. But she goes to Davinie, to John Davinie, to ask questions like, can you tell me about the case? What happened? Can you tell me what happened in this ship? can you tell me what you know? Can you tell me what Papa is going to decide? What are people talking about? She doesn't know anything, so she goes to Davinia to get information about the case. And little by little, in different scenes, in different scenes throughout the movie, this is what brings them together. They're talking about the case. They hide behind, behind bushes and stuff. Not in a romantic way, but just to talk about the case. And I think this is very important for the relationship, because for me, in the end, it was a meeting of the minds. You know, in period films, there's always a love story. And, you know, because marriage was such an integral part of, you know, the lives of women, that they had to secure a marriage. But the love story is almost never the most important part for me. The most interesting part for me is to see how women had to move around in society, how, you know, what they were allowed to do or not to do, the historical context. And in this movie, in fact, the love story is just so great for me, because it was truly the meeting of equals. The introduction of the concept of two equals could meet. And the only reason they showed this could be possible is because Dido was Black. Yes, she was much higher status than John Davinia. John Davinia was the son of a clergyman, of a provincial, of a rural little town clergyman. But because she was Black, there could be some sort of possible match there. However, only when when John Davinia is given the opportunity to become a lawyer, does Lord Mansfield consider him worthy of his daughter. It's very layered and intricate.
Yes.
But what a love story. They do the spoilers. If you haven't seen the movie, go watch it, because we're going to spoil it.
Totally. We should have said that in the beginning. Absolutely, Nene. And I think this is the magic. As I have mentioned this already maybe like three times so far. This is the magic of this film. The story is fascinating and the story is strong and it's so well told. It's a very well told story. And just as you mentioned, this entire case in the background that brings them together, how Dido through this man learned so much. And she was a very avid reader, very well-educated woman and very intelligent. And she was helping her uncle always with his paperwork. And she was given admission to his study. And you don't see her cousin doing this. So from those pieces, you realize that Dido was kind of, somehow maybe not smarter, but at least more interested in all this, in reading, education, and so on, as her cousin. So absolutely, I absolutely agree with this, that this is part of the magic of the entire story, that they are equals in the mind, and that they grow together, they share a passion for a cause.
Mm-hmm. Yes,
and that just, you know, welds them together.
Yeah, and I think we can talk about the actor right now. I had never seen him in any movie, Sam Reed. And he has an interesting face. He's not the typical handsome. He's not a classically handsome guy, but the character is so well written. And we must add that you know, I was doing a little bit of research on John Davinia, and the writers did take some liberties with his story. He was in real life. He was not really a lawyer's apprentice. He was I think a steward or a valet. He was from France, and he had left France just before the French Revolution. But the character as is written in the movie, oh, I fell in love with him. You know,
totally.
At the beginning, I was like, who is this guy? I've never seen this face. He's not the classically handsome guy. But at the end, I was 100% in love with John Davinia.
Yes, because he is so convincing of the passion his character feels for the cause. He is so convinced of the right thing, and he's such a revolutionary mind in those times. Absolutely. And not only that they took the liberty to change that, they also took the liberty to make the case that the Lord Chief was working on. It was also, it was a different case in real life. It was not so scandalous as they put it in the film. But of course, for the drama factor of the film, I think it fitted very well.
The movie makes this case a central part of the plot. And you know, in real life, the Song case did have a great impact in the abolitionist movement in England. However, this is 1783, if I'm not mistaken, and the abolition of slavery happened in 1807 and officially in 1833. So it took a long time for this work to be done. What I found interesting about the movie is was, you know, how subtle the subtlety, the time they took to tell the complexity, the intricacies, how complex this story was, how complex and difficult it has been for Dido, the real life Dido, to move around in society and find a place. What I found beautiful about the movie as well was, you know, to show that in history, there's so many untold stories in history. We tend to think, okay, people accepted slavery. It was a fact of the time. And what the movie reminds us is that there was always people who were against slavery. There were people opposing it and people who understood how immoral and abhorrent and abhorrent an institution it was. And the movie shows this well. There was this group of people who were really working hard to move the law forward, to change the law, to change minds, and yeah, this is shown through Dido and
the story. And David. And I think also one of the key values of the entire story, and therefore of the film, is that they're bringing us Dido's story today, and it is still very up to date. This happens 200 years ago, more than 200 years ago. And up until today, we are still so biased by such constellations of people looking different in a different context, but we do not expect it, you know? And that it confronts us with so many questions that are relevant today in our society. And I think this is something that I mentioned at the beginning. This is maybe why I also found the movie so moving for me. It's because, as I said, I am brown. I think maybe the darkest of all of us siblings.
Yeah.
And I have the curliest hair.
Yes, you do.
And for me to, you know, to see her in that very white place and how I live now in a very white society in Germany. And I haven't really experienced discrimination or racism very openly in Germany. I have been very lucky, but still this feeling of I look different. Wherever I am, I look different because of my hair and because of my looks, you know, and how much I have to tell my kids when they paint, when they color people on their, when they doodle and they pee in color, when they say skin color and say there is no skin color. You know, I am confronting with that all the time.
That's amazing. That's incredible.
There is no, look at your mom. There is no skin color beige, you know? Yeah. And it is, as I said, the topic of the entire film brought to today, it's still so up to date that we are still confronted with all these biases in our mind. Okay. She was put in a very difficult context. She was put like in a cage. She was black in the wrong context. High aristocracy, all white people, you know, accepted, only tolerated, but not really included, you know. And yeah, it's a fascinating topic.
It could go on and on. It's still very relevant. I mean, even more so with everything that's happened since last May with the Black Lives Matter movement, which in fact, had reverb, resonated across the world with, you know, even in England, with the, you know, recently the, you know, the toppling of a slave owner's statue in Bristol. I mean, history is right here. We're still touching it. We're still living it. The consequences of this system, of this institution, we're still grappling with it today, everywhere around the world. And I think personally, as well, you know, when I was watching this movie, I was just so moved. And it's just very hard because it's true. There's a couple things happening here. First of all, the actress, if I might say so, looks like you, my most beloved sister, Gabby. And in fact, when I was watching the movie with my sister-in-law, she says, she looks like Gabby. I'm like, yeah.
Well,
yeah.
I wish I was so beautiful like Google.
You are. You know, a lighter, dark skin, but on the lighter side with the curly hair, you know, she's a mixed race, right? And we are, all of four of us, we are mixed race as well, but goes further back in our line, you know, in our family tree. So seeing her in our, you know, how we are obsessed with, you know, 18th century costumes and period costumes, to see this Black person to see a Black character that's wearing this fantasy clothing that we dream of, which is, you know, this, you know, the period clothing. And she was not, she's a character who's wearing the luxurious costumes. She's not in slave clothing. Exactly. There's another Black character that we didn't talk about, who's a servant.
She meets in London.
That's another very key scene. But a couple things happening. To see this character wearing the elegant dresses of the time is. I don't know how I feel. Yeah, I don't know how to feel about it.
It makes me question so many things about, you know, why do I find it fascinating, you know, and why is it so contrasting for what I know, you know, because it is breaking patterns in our head. It is breaking, as you said, we see a dark skinned woman wearing dresses that up until now we have only seen on white people, you know?
You said it. And the other thing is, yeah, first of all, seeing that. And the other thing is, where are those characters in the period films? They obviously existed. Black people and people of color existed at that time. They didn't suddenly appear in the 20th century.
Exactly. But we have been totally, you know,
erased from history.
Yeah,
and
given a very superficial view of those times. We haven't seen the entire story.
Exactly, because why do I say we haven't seen a character at the time dressed that way? Because we have seen Black characters dressed, you know, they usually are terrible. When you see a period film, is, you know, Black characters are the slaves. If you see American, you know, films about the American past. And it's painful. Another layer of complication is that we're from Venezuela. And there's very few period films from Venezuela.
Mm.
Very few period films from Latin America. There are some, and you know, and to see ourselves, two Latin American girls, how we'd have dressed at the time, what would have been our role, what would have been our position if we were to live at the time, it's complicated. Like, where are we? Where do we place ourselves in that history?
Yes.
And I think that the movie just is a glimpse into that question.
Yeah, and rising also the story of Dido. Yeah, what a fascinating life she had through this stroke of luck, kind of. Nene, I think the entire topic would give us material for maybe three more episodes.
Yes.
But maybe to wrap it up, how many wicks and candles do you give Belle?
10.
Very well.
I get 10 wicks and 10 candles, all of them. I give all the wicks and candles to this movie. I loved it. I cried. It stayed with me. So well made by a woman. My goodness, all of it. All of it. I give them all my wicks, all my candles, I give them to this movie. 10 out of 10.
Very good. I'm going to give it 9. But as I said, it's one of the best movies I've seen lately. As I said, production was nice. Cast was superb. The script was so well written. It was just like, I don't know, not even 2 hours or short. I don't like movies that are too long. And this is the fascinating thing. This film said everything very well in just the right time.
Yes.
They didn't take too many detours. They just told the story and very well.
Scripted. No, that shows how good a script it was.
A script is, yeah. But I'm going to give it 9, as I said, because I found the production a little bit down to earth. And I don't know, maybe it's a little bit unfair from my side, but maybe it is because, as you said, it was an independent film and we don't know how much budget they had. For me, at times, I can only praise the cast and the script and how the entire story worked out. But for me, at times, it looked like a production that could be for television, you know, because they use the same settings several times, you know, where there's a scene where she is picked up as a little kid by her father. Mm-hmm. In some slums in London, and they use the same settings afterwards to portray Dido and John talking, and you can see it's the same place, you know, it's the same setting. So as I said, at sometimes the settings of the scenes look to me like, okay, this could have been maybe a production for a TV film. But as I said, all the rest I can only praise, and I will remember this film as one of the most revealing films for me as a woman and as a, well, I'm not really black, but I'm brown, brown woman, as a Latino woman. It definitely marked me.
And there you have it. And there you have it. Yeah, that's our discussion. I think I'm going to come back to this movie more and more. Like you said, we could talk about, you know, there's material about this movie. We could talk about it for 2-3 episodes. There's a lot in there.
It's a lot. So I think our recommendation would be for the listeners to just check out all the links and references we are posting in our show notes, so that you can research on this very truly fascinating story and maybe find out many more hints of this piece of history.
And that's our episode. Thank you so much for listening.
Hope to see you next time and stay tuned.
Bye-bye.
Wicks and Candles is available on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and Stitcher.
So go ahead and subscribe and follow us on Instagram at Wicks and Candles. Thanks for listening and see you next time.
Wicks and Candles is written, hosted, and produced by Andreina Romero and Gabriela Morgan Romero. The image design is by Pamela Rowling. The podcast theme music is the Concerto for Two Violins in D minor by Johann Sebastian Bach.